CPS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, guys, it's the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show. As someone who's been editing a lot of our 24/7 sports podcasts, I've noticed that everyone's like, welcome to this, welcome to that. And I'm doing the same because I'm editing all them. So this week I decided you're not welcome. You are expected to be here because tomorrow is the last day of February, which means in 2 days, it is March Madness time. Jerry, is there any holiday in any religion, in any secular culture, is there any holiday that's better than the first Thursday of March Madness?
That's a good one. Usually I wear a suit that day.
Do you really?
Put a top hat on, try to hit a couple bars. it's a good conversation starter. Like, what are you dressed up for? And I get to, you know, talk about basketball with them. But I love it. I'm a big Halloween guy.
Oh, yeah?
Christmas is always fun when you
get
stuff.
What's your best all-time Halloween costume?
Oh, man. I mean, I would have to think of ones my children had. We did the old robot, you know, cheap boxes and that coily stuff. I don't even know what it's called. And I thought the robot was a good one, especially when my son Owen fell and he couldn't get up. So we laughed at him for a little bit, watched his legs and arms flail around. And then we finally lifted him up.
One time I did something like that where, like, I dressed up as a robot and I had, like, tin foil wrapped around a shooting sleeve on my arm with rubber bands. And, like, an hour into, like, the costume party, I realized I didn't have feeling in my hand. So I had to, I had to adjust the thing. But as much as I'd love to talk about our favorite non-March Madness holidays, there is March Madness on the horizon, barely 3 weeks out, and we got to get into it. Jerry, it's been a nutty week. We previewed three games for this past weekend, and they did not disappoint. We don't even have time for Oregon, Arizona, which poor Josh Green, if he had just hit those free throws, Oregon would have lost. Arizona would have won. That was a really tough loss, but we don't even have time for that. We've got Kansas over Baylor for the first time all year. The same team is number one in all the computer and person metrics. We've got Gonzaga taking a loss, and we've got San Diego State taking their first loss of the season. Where of these three games from last weekend do you want to start?
Oh, let's just go Kansas, Baylor.
Kansas is really good at basketball, people.
Yeah, they traditionally have. But yeah, I love this Kansas team. I think they are the team to beat, in my opinion. You know, obviously anything can happen. I'm not crowning them the champions yet. But man, they're good. I like the length they put on the court. You know, Dotson's not the biggest guy, but obviously he's a great player. But then after him, it's like everyone has size. They can do any type of switching they want to do. I think, you know, I'm actually looking at highlights right here. They have an intimidation factor, I think, defensively. And then Doak just gives them another dimension that most teams don't have. So to get to the game, very similar teams, physical perimeter defenders. I mean, the defense was incredible in that game. I mean, high level man-to-man defenders. But very few teams have a guy like Azubuike. And that lob play was working.
Yeah, I saw you asked a question to your followers on Twitter that I'm going to throw back in your face. You know, is there anybody in the past, let's say, decade of college basketball who presents the physical presence that Udoka Azubuike does on the floor?
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, Anthony Davis was the retort I got back. Because my question was, since Greg Oden at Ohio State, has there been a player this physically dominant at center? And I could have worded it better because part of the context I had in my mind was that's kind of what they do. You know, Anthony Davis had such a finesse game,
too. I mean, he's everything.
Yeah, Anthony Davis go out. So I wasn't even really considering players like Anthony Davis. Yes, Anthony Davis was a beast. I would say the best center in the game right now. You know, he's got some guys trying to get to his level. But I don't know. I mean, especially what I saw in the last two games. I said it during the Oklahoma State game. I mean, most college teams just have no prayer to answer the physicality of Doak. And Bill Self is doing a great job with the screening action. You know, Self loves a two big guy offense, but I think he's kind of given up on that. I mean, the times have changed. It's been a slow progression for him. You know, they wanted to play McCormick at the same time with Azubuike, and they've just gone away with that. So they're spreading the court and they're running that pick and roll, and it's vicious.
You know, you look back on the past 2 years, Doak missed a bunch of time last year. But with Doak on the floor, in the past 2 years, they have just 5 losses and well over 35 wins. So
yeah, it's interesting. And I hadn't even talked about his defense. So he gives them an anchor on defense where they can pressure even more. And just very few teams have that. You know, it's a perimeter game. It's all about guards. But if you have the guards and then you add a big guy like him, I mean, you're way ahead of the game. And that's kind of how I feel about Kansas right now. I love the elements. Not the best shooting team, but they're not that bad a shooting team. And they make timely shots. They're clutch. But, yeah, I would not want to play Kansas. But I am extremely impressed with Baylor, too. I mean, perhaps they really are the two best teams.
It's a distinct possibility. And, you know, Kansas, as much as you just said, they're not a consistently amazing three-point shooting team. They have lots of dudes who could heat up Isaiah Moss, Dotson,
Agbaji. Yeah, they got guys who shoot. They don't hang their hat on firing threes. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why you like them, because they can do it, but they have a more complete, rounded attack.
At the end of the day, when two teams of this caliber play, you pray, you know, going into it, that it'll be a one-possession game when the clock runs out. And Kansas and Baylor delivered. And so as college basketball fans, it's really exciting. They're now tied on top of the Big 12 standings with at 14-1. So with 3 games to go, you know, that's completely up in the air. Let's move to Gonzaga. You know, a loss on the road against a top 25 team, really talented, a team that has just 2 losses with their best player, Yuli Childs, on the floor. Does this change anything about Gonzaga for you? Because it definitely doesn't for me.
No, we're in the same boat then. I think Gonzaga's very good.
BYU is very good.
Yeah, I love that BYU team. And, you know, kind of mentioned, I love the intensity BYU always plays with. They play with a purpose. On Gonzaga, you know, I mean, they were 5 of 20 from 3. They probably would, or 5 of 25, or 5, maybe 5 of 25. It might have been 20%. So they lost a 3-point shooting battle with BYU, and they had more turnovers. So that's not a good formula. But to me, it's just BYU is good. A very difficult place to play. You know, I wish Gonzaga had a little more, I don't know, quick. I kind of like a team that has, I mean, not just a point guard, but really I feel like they have at least a point guard out there, if not more than one. And, you know, ideally more than one. Like Kansas has a good situation there. Marcus Garrett and Dotson. With Gonzaga, I get the feel they got like guys just playing point guard, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And that causes uneasiness with me. And if they're not shooting well, and if they face too much quickness, athleticism, you know, that can present them a problem. But, you know, nothing changed. Same analysis I had of Gonzaga going into the game remains coming out of that game.
All right, same question. San Diego State coming in at home against a quad 3 loss against UNLV. Traditional power, but certainly not a power in 2020. You know, how much does this loss ding the Aztecs come March?
I mean, I don't know. Again, you know, I'm not really a bracketologist. I don't. Does it knock them to 2? Want to stay at 1? I don't know on that. You are what you are, and I would put it in there with Gonzaga. Nothing really has changed on how I feel about San Diego State after that game. It's very difficult. I'm surprised San Diego State hadn't lost mm-hmm. earlier. Just the nature of the beast, it's tough to win game after game after game. But again, San Diego State, I really love their guards. Flynn, great player. Did not shoot the ball well. I think them shooting is important. And when you look at their rebounding, that's kind of where I get scared. Like, their top rebounders in that game were their guards, Shackle and Flynn. And Mitchell and Winsell, is it not? I think they each had like 4 rebounds apiece. And then San Diego State does not have depth. I just don't know if they can pull it off for 6 games, put it that way.
Well, they now, it's, as we all know, it's a weird season in college basketball, which means it's a normal season in college basketball. But San Diego State now joins just Duke, Arizona, Colorado, and Kentucky as the only teams in the top 25 with quad 3 or quad 4 losses. And it's just weird. Like, we'll get into that right now, honestly.
It happens.
Well, let's get into that with our next segment is called ACC Madness, because I literally, at the top of the ACC, we've got Duke, we've got Florida State, and we've got Louisville, and I have no idea what's flying. The other night, Duke loses to Wake Forest in double overtime. Florida State cleaned up Louisville the night before. So many questions. Right now, who's your favorite ACC team? I think I know who you're going to say. Yeah, Florida State. There you go. And how do we contextualize, let's start with Duke, the highs and lows of this Duke team?
Well, I'll just give you my analysis. as you might be asking for something else that I don't... When you say contextualize, I'll give you why I think it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
If Duke does not play on a red line intensity level, I think they really drop. You know, some teams can afford maybe to do that a little more than I think this Duke team can.
Well, let me illustrate that point for you, because I was looking back on the game against Wake Forest this morning to prep. With 8.5 minutes to go in the game, Wake Forest was sitting on 58 points. At the end of the game, so 18 minutes later, they finished with 113. So that meant that Duke gave up.
You counted the overtime, right?
Yeah. So, okay. So in other words,
just making sure. 18, I wasn't listening that well to the numbers.
18 and a half minutes, they gave up 55 points, right? So that's not even a full half of basketball. Mm-hmm. They gave up 55 points. So yeah. I think that it just illustrates your point that if they're not all there, they're not going
to
be.
They're not going to be that good defensively. Mm-hmm. they have to be revved up, I think. I think they also need their stars, Trey Jones and Vernon Carey, to play really well. Mm-hmm. And I did not see the Wake Forest game, for full disclosure. Read about it some, but you know, I've seen a lot of the Duke games recently. And if they're off, that really hurts Duke. Because I think it's just such a toss-up. Where's Duke going to get anything else from? And in some games they get it, and it's moved around some. And I'm not saying the other players, the complimentary players, are bad. They're not. Obviously, they're good. Duke's a top five-ish team. But those are questions with Duke. You know. But if Duke comes out, because Coach K can coach, they have the right game plan. If they are tuned into the game plan, if they play on that red line, you know, intense man-to-man defense with focus and teamwork, you know, they're on the edge. If they're there and their star players play well, the other guys don't play that bad, you know, they're good enough to beat anyone. They're good enough to win it all.
Mm-hmm.
But they need those things to happen.
So, I mean, it's just wild, you know, thinking about this Duke team. This is not something I'm used to saying when I talk about Duke. And I think it illustrates the point. Let me ask you this question. What is Duke's worst loss? And it's not an easy one to answer, and that presents a problem. Is it Stephen F. Austin at home? Is it Wake Forest on the road? NC State? I mean, Clemson, I don't even know. And I think that illustrates the lows to which this Duke team can fall to. And so last question on Duke before we get to Florida State, and I know you're itching to get there. Gun to your head, who's a better basketball team, Duke or Creighton? Because I know you like Creighton.
That's a good question. I mean, I kind of like Creighton.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you this.
To be honest, I mean,
Duke has just 4 quad one wins. Creighton has 9.
Yeah. Well, you win or lose to who you play against. But I get what you're saying. I look at it just more eye test as a scout guy. I mean, I look at wins, losses, don't get me wrong, and try to contextualize them. But teams have bad games. I mean, Duke losing to Stephen F. There's outliers and anomalies for any team very often. But I think Vernon Carey is very, very good. But I think Creighton can guard Jones at the point with Tyshawn Alexander. I like the scoring overall punch of Creighton, the sort of the balanced attack they have. I thought Bishop looked good the other day when I watched him. I don't know, man. I kind of lean Creighton. I mean, I try to not see the name on the uniforms.
That's hard for people.
Oh, I think it's extremely hard for fans because they're fans of a team. See, I'm not a fan, so it's a little easier for me. And I work in the business. You know, my dad was a small school coach. I wasn't waving banners for, like, my team. My team was my dad's team, which I was, like, a part of. So I have a little different perspective. And so I try, and I think I'm decently good at it, like, trying not to see uniforms, not to even see the players' names. You know, watch them play. And, boy, I really like this Creighton team.
So let's go from one team that you really like to another, Florida State. You've been on them for a while, and boy, did they thrash Louisville the other night.
Yeah, it was a fun second half.
I pray for Jordan Nwora's soul after he got posterized like that.
Poor kid. He did get dunked.
Poor kid.
I was praying more for the guards who were having trouble dribbling the ball up the court against the full court pressure. That's really what turned the game. That it was, as I come out of a tradition of full court man-to-man defense, and so that was fun to watch because you don't see much pressing anymore in basketball. The players are too good, typically, and it's too much risk reward. But Florida State was pushed into that position, and they might be thinking we need to do this more because that it was two separately different halves. They totally took it. It's not always when you press; it's not always about stealing the ball.
It's about getting people out of their rhythm.
You get them, and you get them taking shot, and what that means out of the rhythm is kind of a cliche, but it's very true. But specifically, what that means basketball wise is the obvious: you get rushed a little bit. You're not really getting into your offense that comfortable zone of I'm used to getting a shot here. I hear this. I mean, there's psychology in sports such as, oh, I hear the coach call this certain play. It's my favorite play. I know I'm going to get a good look. I sort of get that excitement. I get that anticipation. I approach that play, attack it properly psychologically. I'm ready to make that shot. Well, against the press, you know, unless you got a team, they're like, yeah, please press us.
Yeah.
We're coming at you, which there are a lot of teams like that. That's why you don't see pressing all the time. But Louisville didn't really have that approach. They end up taking the default shot, often open. You know, when you press, you're going to give up open threes, like in the corner, stuff like that. But you're banking on, one, we're going to get more possessions in the game. So that gives us more time to come back. And hopefully it's not the shot they were feeling great about. You know, you roll the dice. But, man, yeah, they rolled some really good die that night.
Look, I mean,
it worked out.
Florida State, especially in the past decade, has traditionally been a team with immense athletic talent. And the question for them has been, you know, consistency, basketball IQ, that kind of stuff. And so it's no surprise to see a team with that kind of makeup doing well in the full court press. So with three games left for Duke and Florida State and two for Louisville, we've got Florida State 14-3, Louisville 14-4, and Duke 13-4, and so obviously Florida State is the favorite going into the end of the season. Who you got? Who you got for the ACC?
I don't know, man. I don't know who they play, but I like Florida State.
Florida State. We're gonna get into this.
I would have to see the schedule. You know,
we're gonna get into this
a
little.
Gonna wager on this
at the very end of the show, but Florida State has some real bunnies. So that's gonna
I'll stick with my answer. Florida State.
Well, there's nothing wrong with saying that the team in first place is going to finish in first place. Well, with inertia.
Usually that's the right thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it's always safe to say Kansas is going to win the Big 12, because I don't know if you heard, but
they're usually the best team in the Big 12.
Yep. That's right. So that's going to do it for the first half. We'll come back on the other side with 24/7 Sports just released new rankings for the class of 2021. We're going to look at the top five players with Jerry. And we're going to look real quick at Syracuse, which is, yet again, can't believe I'm saying that, on the outs looking in for the NCAA tournament and then looking ahead to who could clinch their conference championship this upcoming week. Stay tuned.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back, 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show. Be sure to hit us up on Twitter at 247CBBPod. We are rounding into form. We've got questions for Jerry there. You ask him, we'll answer him on the show. That's a promise. Really hope we can see and hear from you guys, because we want to answer the questions that matter to you. But for now, I've got questions, and that is, Jerry, how confident do you feel in this new release? We've got the top five kids in top five players, I should say, in the class of 2021. We've got Jonathan Kuminga, Chet Holmgren, Patrick Baldwin Jr., Paolo Banchero, and Jabari Smith. Let's start with Mr. Kuminga. Everyone's got him number one. Why?
Well, the easy answer, he's the best. What makes him the best? Great size, 6'8". Combo forward, you know, kind of that. I don't know, it seems to be a good place to be in today's game, is that 6'7", 6'8", type guy who's a combo forward and, you know, possesses versatility, inside skills and outside skills. He's that type of guy. He can post up and get you baskets. He can shoot the three. He's got physicality. He's just a really good player.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He'll rebound as well. You know, he's, you know, it's the best way. He's good. Sometimes as scouts, we overthink it all, you know, like, you know, because for one thing, some guys check a lot of boxes, and that would be like of a combine nature, or, you know, an easy scout. Does he dribble good? Does he? It's about being a player, you know, a lot of times. So sometimes I think we can overthink stuff a little bit. What I try to remember as a scout is, what if I were choosing teams for a pickup game? Who would I pick? Mm-hmm. And I mean, so if I have confidence as myself as basketball knowledge and think I would be a good pickup game GM, I'm going number one with the guy, you know, who do I want? I would want Kuminga on my team. So that'd be my first pick.
So there's a possibility that Kuminga might reclassify mm-hmm. to 2020. And so from that, I have two questions for you. First, if he does classify up to the class of 2020, where does he fit in that class?
Oh, man. I did not prepare for that one. I'm going to pull up the ranking, then I'll give you an answer. Let's keep rolling. We'll come
and
back
so the
to
other
that one.
And so the other question then is, if he leaves the class of 21 for the class of 20, who rises to number one? Because I know that's been a hot topic of conversation here in the 24/7 Sports office. Not everyone has the same answer, so I'm curious where you stand.
Well, I'm good right now with Chet Holmgren. He's our number two guy. But I do have reservations. All right, so Holmgren, 7-footer, extremely skinny. You can think Porzingis a little bit. I like the comparison of Tayshaun Prince from back in the day. Played for Kentucky and Detroit. Just because of his – he's a little taller than Tayshaun, but Tayshaun practically played like a 7-footer.
Does Chet Holmgren's arms go down to his ankles?
Exactly, they don't. But you put it all together, they're similar length and just, you know, scarily insane skinny. But obviously, Tayshaun Prince, you know, when Durant got in the league, I mean, there have been skinny players that have success. Porzingis, it's just tough these days, you know, because his center of gravity is high and all that. But he can play. People should check out his highlights. Really, really good feel for the game, kind of like a point forward, and can shoot it. You know, you just wonder about, does he bring enough mass to the court? And so can he make, you know, like, you'll watch him play, and the question is how far these unique things he does, how well will they translate when he faces upper level physical type players? And he has success against them on the circuit and all that, you know, the AAU stuff, the travel circuit. But night in, night out, and you know that's just a question with him. And
do you think that could possibly make him a little more injury prone?
Oh, there's always that chance. But you know, if you're too heavy, like Zion, you're injury prone. You know, I guess everyone's injury prone. A lot of that's genetics. There's that possibility, of course. The guy that's really on my mind is Banchero, Paolo Banchero.
Mm-hmm. Power forward just, out of Washington.
It's a big, like Rico Gathers, who played at Baylor.
Ooh.
Back in the day, he reminds me of him with way more game. You know, like handling the ball, passing, shooting. And Rico was a good player, but you remember the physical beast he was.
So much so that Rico Gathers
plays football now, isn't he?
Yeah, in the NFL. So you want to compare someone to a real beast.
Yeah, people should check out highlights on our site. You know, you come to one of our player profiles at 24/7 Sports.
I'll get that plug.
And you get those highlights. But,
plug that.
But I think he can really play. And me included might be making a mistake of like taking his physicality and size for granted. And we always tend to think, oh, this guy will get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But will he ever get as big as this guy? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure people are like, oh, well, one day they're going to catch up to Zion, and mm-hmm. he's not going to be able to just bully people. Well, he's still bullying people. A lot of times they never catch up. So Banchero is a guy, for me, that I really have my eye on. I might as well just roll through the guys.
He's 15 pounds heavier than anybody else in the top 15.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
He's a beast. He can move. Dude. He can. And he's 6'9",
235.
He's got a well-rounded skill game and very intelligent player, and he plays with a chip on his shoulder. You know, like he puts his physicality to use. He competes. And that's huge for me. So I have my eye on him. Let me do a more general thing. This ranking right now, 2021, these guys got a little time. You know, so they're in their junior season.
Next summer's big for them.
Yeah, and that's when, like you asked, sort of like, did I feel good about the ranking? I feel fine about this ranking, but I don't feel like I have the data to really, really judge it yet. Like, we'll get the data this spring, this summer.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a better idea on it. So obviously I have my eye on Banchero as the possible number one guy. Patrick Baldwin is who we have at number two. He's a very good player too, very smooth operator on offense. Not a lot of presence on defense. You know, he's more of a finesse. I mean, he's skilled and he's athletic, but you know, he's not blocking shots all over the place and guarding all kinds of positions and he's not a huge impact defense guy, but very, very advanced offensive game. So he's a guy to keep an eye on. And then who we got fifth? Jabari Smith, upside guy. And I would probably feel the least likely on him because I'm just moving away from upside guy. And I know Holmgren, Chet, who we talked about, has some upside stuff to him, but he has a very well-versed game. Jabari Smith, length, athleticism, and can shoot. Those are pretty important.
Yeah.
But he's got a lot of development to do outside just those specific areas.
Honestly, it sounds like if Banchero can have a good summer and our man Kuminga and our man Jonathan Kuminga could pop up to class of 2020, then you know, you could see our power forward, 6'9" power forward out of Washington jumping into Jerry's number one. From what I'm hearing from you, it sounds
like there's a chance. Yeah.
So let's slide back. I pulled up.
There's a good chance. So I think I've probably said enough about it, and I need to talk about it again in a few more months.
I pulled up the 2020 rankings.
Did you pull it up? Yeah.
So if Jonathan Kuminga reclassifies to class of 2020, where would you slot him?
I like him. And I might have a little, like, are we looking at the composite here?
Yeah, we're looking at the composite.
Right, so it'd be, you know, individually, for me, I would put him in probably, I like, Cade Cunningham would be my number one.
His own man.
I've been on him a while. Evan Mobley, some of the same concerns about physicality and stuff. That's number two. I would put him probably ahead of Evan. I mean, I don't know, man. Anywhere from 2 to 5. But it takes time. You know, it's hard to just, boom, give an answer here. But off the top of my head, I'd put it this way. Cade Cunningham, number one. And then, yeah, I could see two. I could see him being number two. I could also see him being, you know, I don't know what we'll decide as a team, you know, under Evan Daniels' leadership. But it could be 3, 4, 5. I mean, that wouldn't throw me off right now.
I'm just so impressed with guys who reclassify. And I want to move on because we got a couple more things to talk about. But I just lastly, I'm always impressed with guys who reclassify and then still manage to stay in the top five. Like, that just like speaks to the talent. It speaks to, like, you're a year behind in development.
Speaks to, in my opinion, people overdo the age thing.
Just like between 17 and 18 is a real physical year for people. People, you know, hit their final growth spurts. People have an opportunity to get another year in the gym.
Not necessarily with the elite guys.
That's fair.
Because they're not normal humans. So you follow what I'm saying? So like a top five guy is kind of, I mean, you know. Obviously, you run out of numbers. And I'm just giving another side.
No, please do.
Because I hear what you're saying.
It's just impressive to me. You know?
When you deal with that range and that type of athlete, you know, there's not many. Put it this way, most top five players are top five talented, like when they're 15.
Yeah, that's fair.
And there are some exceptions, like Anthony Davis had the huge growth spurt.
Sure.
But, you know,
Obi Toppin.
That's something you got to remember. Like, if you're a 5-star 1 year, and we're talking theoretically. And, of course, like if a bunch of guys reclassified, then you'd have too many numbers. You can't have 5A, 5B, 5C. Sometimes you want to because every year it's relative. So 1 year, number 5 is better in another year than a number 5. But in general, if you are sophomore, junior, or senior, and you are in that higher range, it's like if a top 5 sophomore plays a game against a top 5 senior – yeah, sure, the senior should be older, has advantages, but you don't go into the game like, oh, my God, I hope little Johnny Joe, the sophomore, can hang with this. You're like, we got two top five guys going at it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it reminds me when I was an intern in Washington, D.C., working at a foreign policy think tank the summer after my freshman year of college. And there was a girl who I was interning with, and I was like, this girl is smart, like really, really smart.
Uh-huh.
And her writing was better than all the rest of us interns. We were all pretty young. But then out of nowhere, I find out she wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal. And I was like, oh, so like you're not like a good writer relative to us. You're just like a straight up good writer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what you're saying. You're saying about these 5-star guys. So let's move on.
Yeah, they're different. I mean, they're 5 stars. I mean, people really need to think about this. If you are 16 years old and you're ranked in the top 5 in America in basketball, do you realize how elite a human being, in a way, or as a human being, how elite that makes that person in their field?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think we always think that through.
Top 1% of the 1%.
Yeah, I mean, so how many kids in Europe or South America are going to be better than this number 3 player in the country as a 16-year-old in America? You know, obviously, like to me, grown man physicality, big difference. Like when you get to the NBA, like an 19-year-old or a 20-year-old playing against a 28-year-old.
That's different.
That to me is like, that's why it takes some time for elite players when they make the move to the NBA. But when you're in that, like, just to me, just kind of like, we've gone past adolescence, we're past puberty, we're teenagers, we're not yet adults yet. You know, I'm expecting a 17-year-old to be able to hang with a 19-year-old or whatever.
All right. Well, we're pushing up against the edge of our time. So I'm gonna push our conversation about Syracuse to next week.
Oh, okay.
And let's jump right ahead to a conversation about the upcoming games this week. And I just wanted to run through real quick. You know, there are a couple teams that can clinch, power conference regular season titles this week. So those are some games to watch. So my Maryland Terrapins, who came back down from 17 last night to beat Minnesota on a crazy Daryl Morcel shot. Shout out to Daryl. Shout out to my Terps. So they could clinch a share of the Big Ten with a win on Saturday against Michigan State at home. And if Wisconsin, Illinois, and Penn State all lose between now and then, because the top of the Big Ten is wildly close, Maryland would then clinch it outright. So two wins clinches it for Maryland, a win and a loss by all the teams that are one game behind. That'd do it for them. You think there's any chance Maryland gets a one seed?
Yeah, there's a chance. I don't know,
Jerry, you're so cautious.
When I don't know what I'm talking about, I try to be cautious. I am not a bracketologist. Mm-hmm. I kind of have an aversion to that. I don't really pay attention to it. So I'm cautious because I don't know.
So Kentucky then could clinch the SEC outright with a win over Auburn on Saturday. You know, what are you looking for in that game?
Kentucky-Auburn?
Yeah.
No, that'll be fun.
It'll be fun.
What am I looking for?
You got to assume it's going to be a fast-paced game. A lot of shots.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun watching the guard matchups, the speed of the game. You know, Kentucky, I think, man, I'm going to get on a pet peeve here about tempo.
Do it. I'll sit back and relax. Here we go.
Well, people always talk about this team doesn't want to play fast. You don't want to get in a running match with this team. Well, what does that even mean? So how does me walking the ball down the court keep the other team from running? Now, it creates fewer possessions in the game. Maybe you try to lull them to sleep. It's kind of hard to do that because if a team wants to run, they're going to be pressuring you on D. And, you know, maybe make them use energy on D, but I've never seen a team that wanted to run who had to play a lot of D, then got the ball and was like, oh, geez. No, it's usually you get the ball, you're like, let's play faster. So, but what you do, and I think this leads to the Kentucky-Auburn thing. I think the key thing is shot selection. So when you take poor shots on offense, whether you're playing fast or slow, and along with shot selection, I'd say rebounding coverage, proper, you know, basically not rebounding, getting back on D. Most teams are playing more that style, like one or two guys go rebound. If you take good shots, and to get good shots, sometimes you have to run. So Kentucky's got to play fat. They got to play what Kentucky does. But if they don't get that good shot off the initial push, I do look for Kentucky to try to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nick Richards
certainly.
I think Nick
himself.
Richards could do something. Austin Wise is a good player, but I really like how Richards is playing. I've noticed Kentucky starting to go to him more like a traditional post player, and running stuff for him. And he's like as a bookie, that pick and roll in the middle of the court where you throw the lob. I mean, Aston Hagans and Richards really have a connection on that. So it'll be interesting to play. I don't know. I just had to veer into that.
No, please. You know, I'm glad.
Well, because we got to understand it's not about, they call it like, we don't want to start a track meet. Well, the other team's going to run no matter what. We just got to take good shots. And that might be we get a rebound, we kick it, we push it, and we take a transition three, you know, off one pass. That's not necessarily, that's a good shot most of the time. Sometimes you're better off doing that. You can't just like, shell up. Kentucky ain't gonna shell up.
Nah.
Plus you got the psychology, and a lot of teams, man, you hear the coach saying, oh, we got to slow it down, we gotta, you know, we don't want to. I just think that's bad psychology. I think less talk about the other team, more talk about us, and let's make sure we take good shots and we get rebounding, defensive transition, balance.
Well, now is a great opportunity to tell the listeners we have a surprise for you. You know, whether or not Kentucky, you know, wins the SEC regular season championship with this win over Auburn on Saturday, this might not be the last time we see them. These two teams have certainly established themselves as the class of the SEC.
Yeah, I think that is for sure true.
And you and I just found out that we will be at the SEC conference championship tournament, and so, you know, potentially you and I could see them maybe on a Sunday of Selection Sunday playing for the SEC title.
That'd be a great championship game.
So if you listeners at home are going to be at the SEC conference tournament, you let us know on Twitter. That's at 247CBBpod. We'd love to see you, shake your hand, talk a little hoops, because we're excited about the SEC tournament, and I imagine you are too. Last matchup for this week, Florida State visits Clemson, which is one of the bunnies I mentioned earlier. But the reason I bring it up is because Clemson has already beaten North Carolina, which I know this season is whatever, but in terms of Clemson, beating North Carolina is a big deal. They've already beaten Duke. They've already beaten Louisville at home. And it looks like Little John Coliseum might be having the best year in its entire existence. And so could you imagine a situation where Clemson doesn't make the NCAA tournament, but relative to, you know, its expectations, beating UNC, Duke, and Louisville, and potentially the team that wins the ACC title at home? I think that's a good matchup. Also,
well, yeah, it's tough to beat Clemson at Clemson. I think this Clemson team's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they're really bad. The little bit I've watched them, I thought, you know, I mean, is his name Amir Sims? I believe they're big guy. I really like him as a player. I mean, I think, yeah, dude, if Florida State lost to Clemson at Clemson, I would not be shocked.
I'm never surprised when a Power 5 team loses on the road to another Power 5 team. Nonetheless, this is a game Florida State wants to assert itself and potentially put itself into the conversation for a one seed, definitely to stay involved in the two seed and not drop down to that 3-4 where the percentages go significantly down in the tournament.
Yeah, but those players aren't thinking about this.
This is a game. Well, I'm sure they're just
trying to do their job and play better.
They're like, thinking this is a game we've got to win so that we can take care of business.
That's in the locker room, there's never talk like that.
No, absolutely not. Well,
it's be the best we can be and don't even think about stuff you don't have control of. All you got control of is your effort and your play and your preparation for this game. And because of all, you know, where they are, there'll be hopefully a really heightened focus to do those.
Sharpness,
it's about process.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
You know, and every coach is preaching that. And we as fans and on the outside, yeah, we look at that and we talk about it. But they're saying just do your job one possession at a time, you know, all that good coaching
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, but if they're not thinking that way and they're thinking about numbers and the future, they'll probably get beat.
Clemson has proven that it is not a team to be taken for granted this year.
Oh, for sure.
That's absolutely, we are pushing up on an hour, which we haven't done in a while. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show. I'm your host, Tiny Levitt, joined as always by the illustrious king of assists in college basketball, Jerry Meyer. Jerry, thanks for coming in our new studio. We'll be here with you throughout March. And I'm going to have to go run and produce this real quick because I'm grabbing drinks right after work. So I don't have time to be staying here till 7:30 to get this out. We'll see you next week with 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show. Until then, go Terps.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.